This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. Hope you're well.
Boker Tov, good morning. Of course, a fast day today, a minor fast day for those who are adhering to it. I hope that you will have a meaningful fast. And of course, it sort of signals the countdown period towards Tisha B'Av. Today, the fast day signals the breaking of the walls towards Jerusalem, ultimately led to the destruction of the temple. So we are marking this. And of course, it is an important time for us to continue to remember what our focus is. And I suppose the focus is the city of Jerusalem as our holy city, the Temple Mount, of course, being the holiest site in Judaism. And I think it's right that we have this period of time that we really focus on that. And ironically, yesterday, last night, was the opening of the Maccabi Games. I mentioned it yesterday. But I think for me, what really stood out was the speech that was given by Edan Alexander, who is a survivor of Hamas captivity. He spent a long time in captivity, was ultimately released in a deal. He was a serving IDF soldier on October the 7th when he was kidnapped. And he was one of those who, upon return, when he was finally released, he actually returned back to active duty. And he talks about this, or we spoke about this last night, and he said the following. He said, "There is no greater privilege in this life than defending my home country." He says, "I fought with everything I had against the terrorists, but ultimately I was abducted into the strip. In the tunnels and basements, I lived day to day with severe hunger, thirst, and constant fear of death, and a desperate crippling for the normal life that I had before." But the point was that even though he was there, he somehow hung on to the fact that he knew that people would be campaigning for him. And he said that in his darkest moments, that is the one thought that he hung on to. People were marching and crying out and campaigning for him, his family, and the greater state of Israel. But that as soon as he returned back, he said, "I knew immediately that I was going back to serve in the military, because this is our country and this is our people, a people I'm so deeply, genuinely proud to be an inseparable part of." So that was part of what Edan Alexander had to say. There was much more. And for those people who want to hear a little bit more of it, I would recommend it definitely, because it's hugely inspiring that somebody could come out of such an experience and without much break, without taking a lot of time to recover and to recuperate, he signed back into his unit and he continued to serve in the IDF. And I think it's an important message of resilience sent to those who congregated yesterday, last night, at Teddy Stadium in Jerusalem about the importance of our country, the importance of defending our country, and the importance of fighting against the powers of evil. And, you know, I hope that that message is being heard loud and clear, because unfortunately, there are people even within our own communities who don't quite get it, who don't quite understand that this is a battle of existence, a battle to continue our existence in our homeland and beyond, and that we need to really face up to the powers of evil. So I take my hat off to him. And of course, I hope that those people in the Maccabi Games at the opening ceremony would have been as inspired by what he said as I was.
Incredible. Let's talk about some of the latest news. A bill has passed its first reading that will see Torah study enshrined in Israel's basic law. So why is this being fast-tracked now?
So let's just put it all into context. Israel doesn't have a constitution. Mm. And in place of its constitution, we have this thing called the basic law. And the basic law, even though it is essentially just another law that has been passed by the Knesset, but there is a certain element of importance, greater importance, placed on the basic law, because this, in the absence of a constitution, is really what props up our legal system from the ground up. And so in normal circumstances, and any Jewish person would say, well, if they would like to enshrine the concept of Torah study into our basic law, it sounds okay. It doesn't sound to be harmful. It doesn't sound to be contradictory to what it is that we're trying to do, what our country stands for. In principle, it sounds like a great idea that based that Torah study in our Jewish homeland should be part of the basic law, part of our constitutional right, for want of a better term. It all sounds entirely reasonable and absolutely acceptable. However, timing is everything. And when one looks at the timing and when one looks at the background, then this attempt to enshrine Torah study now, after more than 70 years of the State of Israel, the question is, why wasn't this enshrined in the basic law on day one? Why wasn't it important then? Why has it suddenly become so critical and important now? And we cannot, unfortunately, divorce ourselves from the battle that's been going on across Israel, in the streets, in the Knesset, and everywhere else, about the issue of the ultra-Orthodox youth being called up to the army. And this is a clear attempt before the end of this Knesset and before the next government will take office. And of course, the ultra-Orthodox community are immensely nervous that the current government, which incorporates the ultra-Orthodox parties as part of the coalition, that that government may not be in power after the elections, and it may well be that the new government immediately sets about ensuring that ultra-Orthodox youth are called up to the military or called up to serve our country in the same way as every other youth is required to do who are outside the ultra-Orthodox movement. So they are now trying to fast-track this basic law through the Knesset to enshrine the concept of Torah study as being of ultimate and primary fundamental value in the heritage of the Jewish people, so that they can use that as a tool to say, well, if Torah study is enshrined in our basic law, then by rights, we should be entitled to receive exemption from the military in order to carry out what is enshrined in the basic law, which is Torah study. So it's all a little convoluted and has ulterior motives, unfortunately. As I said previously, if it was simply clean and if it was simply a statement of fact without trying to use it to maneuver a certain strategy or to maneuver a certain policy, it sounds great, it sounds fine, it sounds pretty much part of who we are as Jewish people, even for those people who don't necessarily want to sign up to yeshiva so quickly and want to spend their lives studying Torah, but it doesn't harm anybody. However, unfortunately, by enshrining it in the basic law, it is clearly going to be used as a tool to avoid military service for ultra-Orthodox youth. And for that reason, I am opposed to this happening right now. Because I think that the time has come for the ultra-Orthodox community to sign up to the concept of allowing their youth to serve our country in some way, whether it be in the military or otherwise, but sign up, come to a compromise and say, this is what our youth is going to do as their contribution towards the State of Israel, while every other person of the similar age is required to serve their country.
So, Anthony, let me just ask you it in maybe reframe it and just see if I've got this incorrectly. If something is a value, so let's just say freedom of speech is a value, It doesn't mean that you can, it doesn't mean it's a value above everything. It means it's a value in for a country, for a democracy. So let's just say freedom of speech is enshrined in a constitution as a value. It means it's recognized as a value. But then, obviously, there's certain limitations to it. There's certain requirements around it, etc. You can't just go around defaming people, etc. Surely, if in order to reach a conclusion that everybody is okay with, which is ultra-Orthodox communities compromising in some way, it means that surely it isn't a bad place to start to say that this is a value. Now that we know that it's a value, everybody can feel a little bit better because it's recognized as a value, which is an important message to the ultra-Orthodox community because they see that it's recognized. And then from there, talk about, well, what that actually means. Does it mean that the state can be put at risk because nobody wants to go to the army or no, etc.? Isn't it, in a way, a healthier way to ultimately get to the right conclusion, or am I being naive with this?
I would absolutely agree with you if I felt that this wasn't specifically being used as a tool for a single purpose. In other words, if a value is enshrined in your constitution because people want to use it in order to propagate a certain policy or a certain method of behavior as soon as it's enshrined in the basic law, then I think that we're running into a problem. If you're just trying to make a generic statement that says that freedom of speech is okay, then I agree with that. Or it's a value, it's a basic value. But if you're trying to push that as a basic value in order then to take advantage of it to defame people, then I would say no to that. Then I say, look, if your intention of enshrining the concept of freedom of speech is really designed and it already has a follow-on, as soon as this is enshrined in law, you're going to start defaming people left, right, and center because that was the purpose of you putting it in the constitution in the first place, then I would stop at that point and say, look, I don't think that this is an okay method of dealing with a basic value. I think it should be a basic value. I don't have a problem with enshrining Torah study as a basic value. My problem is that this attempt to push it into our basic law, which hasn't been done since the founding of the State of Israel, and one has to question why all of a sudden now, almost 80 years later, it's suddenly become a basic value, which it hasn't been before. I can see this being used as a specific tool for a particular purpose. And for that reason, I don't think that it's valid to try and push it through right now and enshrine it in basic law, even though I do agree with the general concept of it being a value. I do agree with that.
Let us have your view, 0618951019. I know we're almost out of time, but I want to just ask you about this. The former Iranian supreme leader will be buried in Iran over the next few days. Does this impact on the talks with the United States?
Apparently not, but it's interesting that they have now decided to go ahead with these funeral ceremonies, and they're going to be quite a number of them. It's not just going to be a funeral and a burial and done in a few hours. This is going to take some days and even a week. Ceremonies in various places across Iran, even ceremonies in Iraq, I understand. There's going to be quite a story, a lengthy funeral process. And it's very interesting for me that the Iranians have decided to use America's Independence Day period for this purpose, because obviously in the US at the moment, 4th of July is coming up the day after tomorrow. Not only the 4th of July, but it's the 250th anniversary of the founding of the United States and of the signing of the Constitution. And so there is clearly going to be some downtime in the US over the coming days. People take long weekends and take their summer vacations and things like that. So this period around 4th of July is very much a holiday and a rest period in the US. And it's interesting that The Iranians have chosen exactly that moment. I don't know whether they've chosen it purposefully like that, but clearly they feel safe enough to proceed with this whole series of funeral ceremonies that they're going to be holding in different places. And they feel that it doesn't necessarily affect their position or their standing in their negotiations with the United States. If they felt it weakened them, then they wouldn't do it. Obviously, they've waited already quite a long time. So it's interesting that it's all happening now. Mm. And as I always say, timing is not coincidental, and I'm reading quite a number of things into it.
That's where we leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Thanks again for an incredible week, an important week of reporting. Wishing you a peaceful weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we'll catch you on Monday morning.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.